So, this week is Parshas Mishpatim. If you have your stolen Chumash, it begins on page 416. Thank you all for being here tonight. And just have to keep my eye on the waiting room. So that's why I don't want to have the waiting room, because I have to let everybody in. But okay, so let's begin. The Eila HaMishpatim. Asher Tasim Lefneim, and these are the ordinances, it's an interesting word, that you shall place before them, Mishpatim. So Rashi here focuses in on the first letter in the parasha, actually, Ve'ela, the Vav, which means and, which has the connotation of it being a continuation of what was said before. So Rashi here says, "Kol makom shenemar eila posel asav yishanim ve'eila mosav al yishanim." And where it says the word eila, these, it's coming to exclude what was said before. These things that are coming are different than what was said before. But when it says ve'eila and these mosav al yishanim, it is actually adding to what was said before. So this is a continuation of what was the subject towards the end of last week's parasha. And what was the subject of last week's parasha? It was what happened on Har Sinai, on Mount Sinai, the revelation at Sinai, the giving of the Ten Commandments. So says Rashi, Ma'ar Rishonim Misinai Af Elu Misinai. Just as what was discussed in last week's parasha was Misinai, it was discussing those mitzvos that were handed down or given, transmitted from Har Sinai to the Jewish people, so too these mitzvos, these mishpatim discussed in this week's parasha, also have the same source, that they came from Sinai. And the question, which we've discussed, I think, multiple times in the past, is that this seems to be, in the context of the rest of the Torah and things that we know from other places, this seems to be obvious. We know from other sources that all the mitzvahs of the Torah were given to Moshe on Har Sinai, meaning when he went up there for 40 days and 40 nights, which actually, the end of this week's parasha talks about Moshe Rabbeinu going up on the mountain, and during that time that Moshe was on the mountain, he was taught the entirety of the Torah. All of the Torah wasn't Har Sinai. Well, I think we've mentioned in the past a very interesting idea that one of the commentaries says that it seems to be an indication that there was something particularly connected to Har Sinai about this particular parasha, this week's parasha, perhaps more than everything else, and everything else was told to Moshe on Har Sinai, besides the Ten Commandments themselves that Hashem spoke to the entire, in the presence of the entire Jewish people, and to the entire Jewish people at Har Sinai. But the rest of the Torah Hashem told it to Moshe when he was on Har Sinai. But these mishpatim, in a sense, they were the same as the Ten Commandments. That meaning that Hashem told it to Moshe while everyone was standing there, and while there was still the thunder and the lightning and the entire description of what was going on Har Sinai. That's when this particular parasha was said. And if you read the parasha, it definitely seems that way. That at the end of the parasha, it goes back to the different things that happened on Har Sinai at the time of the giving of the Torah. The chronology is somewhat debatable. There's a debate among the commentaries about it. Maybe we'll get back to that soon. But in general, if you just look at the way, the flow of the way the Torah writes it, it talks about the Jewish people at the mountain, Har Sinai. Then we have an interruption, really, with all of these laws at the beginning of this week's parasha. And then at the end, it goes back to the discussion of the Jewish people in Har Sinai and Moshe going up to the mountain. So it seems that this is sandwiched right in the middle of the Sinai story in order to tell us that there was a specific way that this parasha was given, that it was more connected to that revelation of the Torah at Har Sinai than the rest of the Torah. And the question is why? Why these this parsha particularly should it be more? Why was it given in a way that was more like the Ten Commandments? It was given in a way that was more associated with the revelation at Har Sinai than the rest of the Torah, which was also given at Har Sinai, but not in the same way, with the same revelation. That's I guess one question, rather long question, but I want to go back now. Turn to the all the way towards the end of the parsha to ask one more question. That, but just to get the idea, if you have your Chumash again, if you could turn to page 440, chapter 24, and there, like we mentioned, it goes back to the story of the Jewish people at Har Sinai, and it says, "Vel Moshe Amar," that to Moshe Hashem said, "Ale el Hashem." Go up to Hashem. You Atav Aaron Nadav Aviu B'Shivim Zekanei Yisrael. You Aaron Nadav Aviu and 70 of the elders of Israel, and you should prostrate yourself at a distance. And then Manigash Moshe Levadol Hashem, and Moshe alone shall approach Hashem. So there's the end of the just to see how this ends. At the end of this section, it says on the very last pasuk in this week's parsha, on page 442 at the bottom. And Pasuk Yud-Ches, it says, "Vayavo Moshe b'sarcha anan." Moshe arrived in the midst of the cloud. Vayal alahar, and he ascended the mountain. Vayhi Moshe b'har abar yom abar milayla. Moshe was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. So here we have Hashem telling Moshe to go up. In the middle, we have some other things. We'll talk about that soon. But there is some discussion among the major classic commentaries as to the chronology of this, when this happened. Rashi says that this particular section of the end of the parsha is not written in a chronological order, and this is really something that happened before the giving of the Ten Commandments. So chronologically, this actually happened together with the description of the time, the week or so that the Jewish people spent in at Har Sinai before Hashem came down and gave the Aseret HaDibros, gave the Ten Commandments, and that's when this particular section happened. That's how Rashi interprets it. However, many other commentaries, foremost among them the Ramban, Nachmanides, they understand that no, this is actually in chronological order. This is a description of something that happened after the giving of the Ten Commandments. They say that everything happened in chronological order. First, we have the last week's parasha of Hashem coming down and giving the Ten Commandments. Then we have the giving of the Mishpatim, the laws at the beginning of this parasha. And then we have at the end of this parasha, more things that happen at Har Sinai right after the giving of the Torah and the Ten Commandments, and also the giving of these laws, which came together with that. And then Hashem told Moshe to go up to the mountain and to remain there for 40 days and 40 nights. That's how the Ramban understands it. So with the Ramban's understanding, I want to ask the following question. If we look at back to page 440, chapter 24, so the Pasuk says, the next Pasuk, we actually read the first Pasuk, but Pasuk Gimel, but Pasuk 3, it says, "Vayavo Moshe came, v'yisaper la'am is called divrei Hashem." And he told the people all the words of Hashem, "V'eis kol ha'mishpatim," and all of the ordinances, all of the laws. Now, according to the Nachmanides, according to the Ramban, this actually means the Mishpatim that it's referring to is the Mishpatim, the laws that I mentioned at the beginning of this week's parasha. So again, the order of things is Hashem gave you the Ten Commandments. Hashem told Moshe about these laws, the Mishpatim. And now Moshe comes and he tells the people the laws. Then it says, and the entire people responded with one voice, and they said, "All the words that Hashem has spoken, we will do." That's how they respond. All the words that Hashem has spoken, we will do. Now, this brings up a question. The almost identical words in the mouths of the Jewish people we have in last week's parasha. in last week's parsha, before the giving of the Ten Commandments, we have the words on page 402, if you want to look, we have the words, it's in chapter 19, verse 8, the whole nation answered together, by Yomra, and they said, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Naseh. Everything that Hashem has spoken, we shall do. So, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Naseh, whatever Hashem says, we will do. So, which seems to be a commitment to listen to Hashem. Now, over there, there was a commitment to everything that Hashem said, you'll be my people, and you'll keep my covenant. And the reaction was, whatever you say, we'll do. So they already made that commitment. They already made that statement before. Again, according to the Ramban, several days before. Before the giving of the Ten Commandments, they said, whatever Hashem says, we will do. So why is it necessary for them to repeat the same? It's called Hadvarim Ashadibra Hashem, and there it said, Kol Ashadibra Hashem. It's almost the exact words. They added a couple of words. I'm not sure exactly why, but the same, it's certainly the same idea, and it's almost the identical words that they said, whatever Hashem says, we will do. Why do they have to repeat that? That's probably one of the reasons why Rashi understood that this is actually a repeat of the same story that happened then, just filling in some more details for some reason over here. But according to the way Ramban learns that this is not a repeat, but this is actually something that happened several days later. So then why would they have to repeat themselves and again say whatever Hashem says we will do? That's the second question I wanted to ask. So, before I start answering these questions, I would like to quote you something from the Medrash. This parsha's Mishpatim, deals with the laws here that are called Mishpatim, which are, they translated ordinances. It comes from the word Mishpat, which actually means justice. So Mishpatim are laws of being just or something like that. And many of the laws are, it's civil law. It's laws that have to do with monetary things, or not only monetary things. There's laws that have to do with capital punishment for murder, for kidnapping, things like a person who strikes his father or mother will be put to death. There's also laws of damages, torts, or whatever those things are called, regarding if a person wounds someone, or if a person animal hurts someone, or if someone digs a pit, creates some kind of a dangerous stumbling block in the street, and someone gets damaged. All these kinds of laws are here in this week's parasha. They're called mishpatim. And there's a medrash that says something very interesting. It points out that the mishpatim come again right after the Aseres HaDibros, right after the Ten Commandments. But the medrash points out also right before the Ten Commandments, we have the concept of mishpat. Because right before the story of the Jewish people receiving the Ten Commandments, in last week's parsha, we have that story about Yisro and how the judges were appointed. And it says, "V'shaftu esam b'chaleis." We don't have to turn to the psukim, but if you recall, we spoke about it last week already, also a bit how not much, but we mentioned that Yisro. So Yisro came and he made this recommendation, and they made a whole system of a justice, a judicial system with judges. And it says that these judges were appointed and they judged the people. So it says the Medrash the following thing. The Medrash says that we find the idea of justice, of dinim, of laws of justice at the beginning. And we have before the giving of the Ten Commandments, we have it right after the giving of the Ten Commandments. So it says that could be compared, he says, to a noble woman who's walking down the street and she has servants walking in front of her and servants walking behind her with weapons. She has guards. She has guards in the front and guards in the back. So the noble woman in the middle, that's symbolic of the Ten Commandments, which is symbolic of the entirety of the Torah. The Torah is, the Ten Commandments, as the commentaries point out, are kind of headings, chapter headings almost, of the entire Torah. So we have the Torah in the middle, and then we have the guards, which are the Mishpatim, the law, the justice laws at the beginning, and we have the guards at the end, before and after. That's what the Medrash says. So the question is, what is this concept? What is this concept that the Mishpatim are the guardians, so to speak, of the Torah? How do we understand that? Okay, so those are our questions for today. So briefly to repeat them, we find that Mishpatim have a special connection with Har Sinai, the way they were given. Why is that? Then the question on the end of the parasha, why did the Jewish people have to repeat their commitment to the Torah after the Ten Commandments, when they already said almost exactly the same thing before they received the Ten Commandments? That's the second question. And the third question is, what is this idea that the Mishpatim are the guards of the rest of the Torah, and therefore they're put before and put after? So, I want to begin to explore this by mentioning something which we certainly mentioned in the past years ago. I don't recall in recent years that I discussed this, but it bears repeating. There's a fascinating section, essay of the Rambam, of Maimonides. Maimonides has an introduction to Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of the Fathers. It's eight chapters. It's called Shmona Prakim, which means the eight chapters. And there in the Shmona Prakim, discusses a debate that has taken place among the philosophers, among scholars of religious scholars. And there, the debate is as follows. The debate is, who, you have two people, both of them do everything they're supposed to do, theoretically. Both of them do everything they're supposed to do. One of them doesn't have an inclination to do anything wrong. They want to do everything. They're you know, so good-hearted that they always just want to do the right thing, and they do the right thing because that's what they want to do. No conflict. That's one person. Then on the other side, you have another person who always also does everything he's supposed to do, but that person does it, he's conflicted, he has the inclination not to do it, it's difficult, it's a struggle, and he overcomes his inclination, and he does the right thing anyway. Which one of these two people is on a higher level? Ma'ula, who's higher? That's the debate. Now, I'm not going to ask you your opinion, maybe you can tell me if you want, but I'll tell you what the Rambam does with this. The Rambam says that there are really sources on both sides, sources that are reliable sources on both sides. He says, first of all, the philosophers, he quotes, all say that it's a much higher level not to want to do something wrong. That's much better than someone who wants to do something wrong and has to overcome it. That's the opinion of the philosophers. And he says it's not only the opinion of philosophers, he brings Torah sources to that extent, the Torah sources to that side as well, that say things what's the word? Nefesh Rasha Ibsara. It's a wicked soul that desires bad, or something like that. Okay? That's a pasuk in Mishlei from Proverbs, from Shlomo HaMelech. So there's a certain wickedness in desiring bad. In other words, if you don't desire bad, it's much better than if you do desire bad. That's on one side. On the other side, there are sources in the Torah sources that say no. There's Torah sources that say that greater people have greater temptations, or this idea that the more difficult it is, the more reward you get. And then there's a statement of our sages that say that a person shouldn't say, lo yomer adam, a person shouldn't say, e'ef shilechel basa chazir. A person should not say, I don't want to eat pork. E'ef shilubba shatnis. I don't want to wear shatnis, which is forbidden wool and linen combinations. So the person shouldn't say that. But rather, a person should say, actually, I really want to do it. My asa, but what can I do? My father in heaven decreed that I shouldn't do it. So that seems to be saying very clearly that it's almost wrong for a person not to want to do it. A person shouldn't say, I shouldn't say, I don't want to do it. A person should say, no, I really wish I could eat that cheeseburger. You know, that cheeseburger looks great. I wish I could eat it. But what can I do? My father in heaven told me not to do it, so I'm not going to do it. That's the way a person should keep the Torah. So which one is it? Which one is on a higher level? Okay, so comes the Rambam, and some of you may recall hearing this. I spoke about it again some years ago. Says the Rambam that it's both the, like the old rabbi joke about, you know, two people come to the rabbi and with a dispute, and one says, tells their son, the rabbi says, you're right. And the other one tells the rabbi that's their son, the rabbi says, you're right. And the rabbi says, how can they both be right? He says, you're also right. Right? That's the old rabbi joke. So here comes the Rambam and he says that both sides are right. And if both sides are right, but how do you reconcile that? So he says it depends. There's a distinction. Between different kinds of good deeds, so to speak. Certain types of mitzvos or good deeds, it's better that a person shouldn't want them at all. And other types of good deeds, it's better that a person should want to do them and not do them anymore. So the question is, which is which? Says the Rambam, and he quotes this, he's quoting a Gemara, that the Gemara says that there are two basic types of mitzvot, which is, you may be familiar with this idea, but the Rambam develops it in this context. He says there's two basic types of mitzvot. There's mitzvot that are called mishpatim, and there are mitzvot that are called chukim. Mitzvot that are called mishpatim, says the Rambam, are mitzvot which the Gemara describes as, even if the Torah wouldn't have told us about them, it would have been by right, we should have known about them anyway. Something like that. Which are mitzvos that have a certain rationale, we have a certain intuition that they're right. So for example, not to steal, not to murder, or perhaps to treat people nicely on the positive side. Those are mitzvos that there's some kind of inherent, intuitive understanding that the certain things are right and certain types of things are right and certain types of things are wrong. And there are mitzvos in the Torah that correspond to that. Many of those mitzvos that we have in this parasha. Don't give, we have the question of murder and theft and taking responsibility for damages and taking the responsibility for the damages of one's animal does, and all those kinds of ideas. Those are things that just feel right to us because that's the way Hashem made human beings, with a certain intuitive understanding and feeling those things are right. That's one kind of mitzvah. Then there's other kind of mitzvah. Another kind of mitzvah called chukim. It's mitzvahs that we have no intuitive feeling or understanding that there's anything right or wrong about them. So, for example, he says not eating non-kosher food. There's nothing intuitive about that. Or not wearing shatnez, not wearing wool and linen, or those kinds of things. Those are mitzvahs that are called chukim. They're mitzvahs, they're laws. Hashem lays down the law. Whether we understand the reason, we don't understand the reason, whether we have an intuitive that it's right or wrong, or we don't, we really have no idea why it should be right or wrong, but Hashem told us to do it or not to do it, and we follow what he says. Those are chukim. Says the Rambam that when it comes to chukim, to laws that we have no intuition about their rightness or wrongness, so he says, really, there's no, doesn't make any sense. This is what he seems to be saying, the Rambam. Doesn't make any sense that we should want to do them. We should want, well, he says, that's why a person shouldn't say, I don't want to eat cheeseburgers because I don't like cheeseburgers. That wouldn't be right, because there's really nothing wrong with cheeseburgers as far as we can understand, as far as we know. So if it would be up to us, if we wouldn't have any outside knowledge from Hashem, we certainly would want to eat cheeseburgers. So why don't we eat cheeseburgers? Because Hashem told us. And so on that side, that's where the side is that it would be wrong for a person to actually want to eat the cheeseburgers. Would be wrong for us for a person not to want to eat the cheeseburger. There's nothing wrong with wanting it. You might as well want it, but there's nothing stopping you from wanting it. Whereas the part where the philosophers are right are by those kind of mitzvahs that the philosophers understand. And that's the idea is when it comes to something like theft, like stealing, or like murder, or like damaging people, or like not taking responsibility for damages, or by treating people not well, those kind of things, we don't want to say, really, I really want to kill that guy. But Hashem, what can I do? Hashem doesn't want me murder. If that's where a person's up to, he certainly shouldn't murder the guy. That's a good enough reason not to murder the guy if that's where the person's holding. But certainly it's not the highest level for a person to feel that way. The highest level is that a person has developed his character. Murder is an extreme, obviously. But the highest level is that a person should develop his character to the point that he only wants to do good to other people. That he only wants the responsibility that he feels is so strong. It's an intrinsic, inherent feeling. A responsibility in case I damage someone. It's not like, oh, I wish I didn't have to pay the guy, but what can I do? The Torah says I have to pay the guy. No, I want to pay the guy because I feel it's not just, it's not right that I shouldn't take responsibility for my actions. And that's the level of mishpatim. And that's where the Rambam says that it's correct, that it's a higher level not to want to do it. So, with this distinction, first of all, we can understand, and I think many say this already. That's why, that's one possible reason why the Mishpatim are connected, particularly with Har Sinai, because one can make a mistake and think that the Mishpatim is just telling us, you do what feels right or something like that, because the Mishpatim have that kind of quality to them, that it's something that sits well with us and it feels right. But that's very dangerous if we would just look at the Mishpatim that way, because sometimes a person has not yet developed his sense of right and wrong. And we have to look for the Torah, and we have to look at it as a part of the Torah that came from Har Sinai, that came from Hashem. And even if it doesn't feel right, we got to do it anyway, because otherwise we can fall into the trap of making ourselves the ones to decide of what's right and wrong. And that's why the Mishpatim, more than the rest of the Torah, are connected with the revelation of Har Sinai. That's one idea. But there's really something, there's one other point here that goes much further than this, and this is the point I wanted to get to tonight, which is, although the Rambam makes this distinction, and he seems to be saying, let's take the example of eating pork, that even the Chazal say, a person shouldn't say, I don't want to eat pork. It's what can I do? Hashem told me not to. So in the sense, it sounds like a person really should want to eat pork. If he passes by the treif, the not kosher restaurant that's serving the pork, and I wish I could go in there and eat it, right? But the truth is, there's something, it's not quite like that. I think even the Rambam, you have to understand it in a much more subtle way. And I'll explain it. It's really a pretty basic idea. But let's talk about the following. We'll just have to introduce this with one more idea here. One of the things that we find in this parasha, which we mentioned before, is the great severity, how terrible it is if a person doesn't treat their parents right. We have somebody, Make Ish Vameis, I'm sorry, Make Ovi Ve'ima Mos Yumos. So if a man, one who strikes his father or mother, shall surely be put to death. Mekalel avav ve'imam asyumas, one who curses his father or mother shall surely be put to death. We have the idea that of how strict, how terrible it is if a person doesn't treat their parents right. And so the Sefer HaChinuch explains when he talks about the mitzvah of kibud av ve'im, he says that this is telling us, this is training us in the concept of feeling gratitude towards those who brought us into the world and those who brought us up. And I think we can say that the Torah is so strict about it because it wants to bring out this point that we owe everything to our parents, our whole lives, literally to our parents. And since we owe everything to our parents, we must have that develop in ourselves this idea of gratitude, which is something that we have a certain amount of intuitive understanding that it's right. We have to develop in ourselves that understanding of how crucial it is to treat our parents right. And that's part of what the Torah is describing over here. But the Sefer HaChinuch goes a step further. And he says that this is not only in order to develop ourselves for the midah, the attribute of Hakaras HaTov, of gratitude, which is certainly an important thing. But he says we have to take that to the next step. And that is, we have to apply that concept of gratitude towards our relationship with Hashem. This is a very, very central and important concept to understand. That, but let's talk about it in this context. In this context, the idea is that Hashem, we owe everything to Hashem, literally. Everything, right? But in order to develop the proper understanding and feelings of the appropriate response and the appropriate, in order for it to elicit the appropriate relationship to Hashem based on the fact of how much He's given us. So the way that's developed is by having the proper response, relationship, understanding towards those people in our lives that represent that kind of relationship. And there's no one in our lives that represents the relationship with Hashem, our relationship with Hashem, more than our parents, and then our relationship with our parents. So if we relate to our parents and we develop our ability to fine tune an intuitive understanding of the gratitude that we need to have towards our parents to the extent that the Torah guides us to develop that of course has intrinsic value, but another no less important value is to take that and to apply that to our relationship with Hashem, and that spills over to the entire gamut of the rest of the Torah as well, because now we realize that Hashem is our parent, and therefore we have to treat Him the right way. And with that being said, if we go back to what our sages tell us, that a person shouldn't say, I don't want to eat pork, but rather a person should say, I want to eat pork. But the truth of the matter is, a person only wants to eat pork up to a point. A person should only want to eat pork up to a point. Up to which point? Up to the point that a person realizes, and that's what it says there in that medrash, that my father in heaven told me not to. So imagine somebody who really, really wants to go eat in a certain restaurant. And for whatever reason, his parent, who he loves and he respects and he has the greatest gratitude towards, for whatever reason, the parent doesn't want him to eat in that restaurant. They think the food is not healthy. So your father tells you, whatever, please, well, whatever your name is, your uncle, don't eat in that restaurant. Okay? So the person may want to eat in the restaurant, but at the end of the day, how can I eat in the restaurant? My father told me not to. But it's a tricky thing, because on the one hand, not eating the tray for not eating the restaurant, it's a choke. A person doesn't have a person really feels, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with eating in that restaurant. I don't know what my father's talking about. That's on one level. Or then what's wrong with eating pork? There's nothing wrong with eating pork. It's true. On the level of our own understanding, there's nothing wrong with it. But if a person would go ahead and eat the pork or go ahead and eat in that restaurant, that person would be an ingrate. that person would be treating their father in a bad way. And on that level, on the level of the relationship with his father, that chok all of a sudden is a mishpat. In other words, it's something that doesn't have a rationale or that we can understand. It's something that doesn't have an intuitive a feeling that it's the right thing. That's only on the level of the intrinsic what it is, the intrinsic act of eating it. But on the level of the fact that that Hashem told us not to do it, on that level, it has carries all the weight of the most intuitive thing. It's the most, it should be the most intuitive thing that I can't even think of doing such a thing. When Hashem, my father in heaven, the one who gave me everything, told me not to do it, I can't even think of doing such a thing. And that's the idea of the Mishpatim actually being even the chukim, even the things that we don't understand, are actually the mishpatim. So at the end of the day, this we can understand. I'm sorry, what the Medrash is saying, that the mishpatim, that these kind of laws are actually the guards, the weapons which allow us to keep the rest of the Torah. Because when a person is enticed by his inclination to do something wrong, and it's something that they really feel intuitively that or whatever it is, whether it's in their intuition or whether it's their animalistic part, whatever it is, but they feel compelled to do something wrong. How do we get ourselves to stop? So one of the primary ways of getting ourselves to stop is, how can I do such a thing? Hashem, I owe everything to Hashem. Hashem told me not to do it. And where does a person get that feeling from? How can I do everything to Hashem? If that person follows the mishpatim, if that person deals with his fellow man, whether it's his parents, which is one primary example in the parasha, whether it's a feeling of responsibility if he's damaging things. How can I do such a thing? I'm causing, Hashem puts certain things into place and I'm breaking his system. I'm destroying what he's trying to accomplish in this world. Whatever, it's a sense of damage. Or how can I do such a thing? Even we have the concept, it's a difficult concept, we can't get into it too much now, but the concept of an eved, of a servant. So I'm Hashem's servant. I have to be careful with things that with monetary things. So in a sense, Hashem owns me. So I have no right to go ahead and do something else. And these are all ideas that are inherent in these mishpatim, the idea of gratitude to parents, the idea of responsibility, the idea of ownership. All of these ideas, if we apply them and they're made to be applied to our relationship with Hashem, that's going to give us the ability to keep the rest of the Torah. That's why the mishpatim are the weapons which we use for the rest of the Torah. And I think with that, we can understand also why the Jewish people, after receiving the mishpatim, they repeated their commitment to keep the Torah. Because it's one thing before they received the Ten Commandments, before they received the Mishpatim, that was on one level that they said whatever Hashem says we should do. But after, it says very clearly, Moshe told the Jewish people the Mishpatim. They told them these Mishpatim, and they got the message. They understood that, listen to all these things, how careful we have to be about our parents, how careful we have to be about all the people's property, how careful we have to be about treating people fairly, and how careful we have to be not to infringe on other people's property rights. When they heard all of those things, they said, "Oh, now we have to redouble our commitment to Hashem, because now we understand that the way we have to deal with Hashem is on a completely different level. It's on the level of all of these lessons and how we have to deal with other people." That's a big part of the lesson of this week's parasha. And thank you all very much for listening and for joining tonight. And have a
thank you.